Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.fm to get started.
I'm Maria Menounos, and you're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin. What's up, AfterBuzzers? We are here for the finale of The Outsider. Such an exciting night tonight with an amazing episode and a very special guest. I'm your host, April Wissenhant. Thank y'all so much for joining us. So much to talk about tonight. Joined by my lovely co-host, Mrs. The Allison Bean.
Hi, I'm here.
Woo! And sitting right next to her, Max Beasley himself.
Can't believe it.
Oh my
gosh. We did it. We made some stuff happen.
I was freaking out for a second because I'm on live chat right now and the volume, like I muted my computer and yet it was, there was anarchy and I heard volume. So sorry. I was freaking out for a moment. If you saw my face.
I did not hear that at all.
Right.
Max, of course, plays kind of like a hero of the episode, the last few episodes, I'd say. Bolton.
Well, he's kind of like the hero, but also the guy that effed it all up. Like, it's weird. Well, effed it all up, and then he went out like a champ, but he really did eff it all up.
Yeah.
I'd say that's pretty accurate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever you read the script about, like, you're the one that's like, tells him, hey, this is happening and messes all up, what do you think in your mind?
I didn't. You know what? When I actually was approached about the job, mm-hmm. I spoke to Richard Price, the writer,
right.
and one of the producers, and I'd only seen two or three scenes for the audition, so
gotcha.
I had no idea what the part was. I had really no idea. All that I knew is it was great writing
mm-hmm.
and great cast, and so I got on the phone with him, and he was telling me the story, and he's saying this and this, and then an hour and a half later, I was like, can I see some scripts?
Right.
It sounds quite involved, you know. And then when I read them, I was delighted because there was a lot of work to do. But I didn't think it was a horrific moment. I just thought he's just trying to protect his brother, you know, and he's just
right.
trying to do the right thing, really.
And in his mind, that's exactly what he was doing. But that's also something I almost felt bad for him in that moment. I know that wasn't from tonight's episode, but I felt bad for your character in that moment because you didn't know, you know.
He had good intentions.
Yeah.
But I think Claude reacted accurately. He was like, what the F did you just do? This
yeah.
guy is in my, or whatever, this thing is in my brain. And so, mm-hmm. and then in that moment you saw in his face, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it all makes
happened.
Sense now.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone will die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
also, before we get into the full meat of tonight's episode, I think it must be noted the amazing accent that you did. We were talking about it before the show. Said you had an amazing coach. And
thank
I'm
you.
Still, like, shook by it.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, it's just one of the tools, isn't it? You've got to make sure that it's nailed, and especially on something like this. And I'm really lucky. I've got a great guy here called Michael Buster, and
mm-hmm.
He's a perfectionist, so he drills and drills and drills. And he wants to know, he doesn't say, let's do a generic southern accent.
Right.
Where are you from? What town? And then, and what was interesting, I actually watched, I asked the producers for some of Paddy's earlier scenes with Ben,
mm-hmm.
just to get a feel for where he's placing it. And then it wasn't far from where we were. And, you know, you move about, your dialect changes a little bit. And
right.
Michael said, okay, there's Paddy, this is us, and we'll marry it. And, It's great to see, but it is hours and hours of work. There's no doubt about it.
I'm sure.
Was he the coach for other people on set too?
No, I've worked with Michael before though. He's probably one of the best in the US. You know, he's phenomenal. He's worked on some huge jobs and with some great clients.
There's a lot of Brits on that show, so we had a lot of good American accents from a lot of
excellent
British actors.
Yeah, I mean, Yule's very East Coast. He toned it down. Bill's New York. Of course, Ben. is Melbourne.
Oh, he's Australian.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Ben's Australian. And
he always pulls out a good American accent.
Definitely.
Cynthia.
Yeah, Cynthia's British.
Right? Yeah.
She's from London.
Right.
And I thought she was flawless with the dialect.
She did. She did amazing.
And it's one of those things that people do see you if they know you as an actor, and that unfortunately the first thing they do is that their ear is really tuned in to,
mm-hmm.
and then I think the trick is hopefully that after about 3 or 4 minutes they forget, and especially if the work's prepped and good, they really then buy into the character. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you made me forget, that's for sure. And it was 100. Yeah. Episode starts out off tonight, obviously.
With a bang.
Like, holy smokes. I didn't think everything was going to happen as fast as it did. Yeah. I am so happy that your character is the one that kind of finally got Jack's attention, basically, because he's just there. Like, I forget who he took out first. I think Andy.
He takes Pelly out.
Yeah, he took Pelly out.
Exactly.
Jeremy.
He, you know, just left and right. But you and Claude show up late mm-hmm. with Howie. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that's why I say, like, I feel like your character was kind of, like, the hero, obviously did a bad thing, but you're the one who got him to kind of, I think you, like, you're the first person who hit him, because you did actually hit him.
I think there was something, I don't know whether I clipped him or something near him, but gotcha. The thing is that what I was thinking about that is that there's a scene with Ben earlier in the, going back to episode 9, where mm-hmm. this bravado, this guy that he is, you see just another side of him where he says, he's all I've got, you know. Mm-hmm. And Ben's like, your brother, and he's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And he says, don't worry, we're going to take care of him. And he says, please, you know, he doesn't say please, he says, make sure you do.
Right.
And it was more of a vulnerable moment that to show that really he adores his brother, he's all that he's got, yeah. you know. And so it's that fundamental organic thing where you just go, someone's messing with my kin, they're going to get it. Simple. Right. So off we go. Let's go and blow him away.
That Love location it. Has been a sad sight for the Bolton family.
Oh,
certainly
my God.
Has.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, something we learned later in the episode, obviously, but when I'm still going to call him El Cuco, even though he says that he doesn't know what he is, but that he's being filled with the blood of the Bolton family. So do we think, I mean, not to like get ahead to predictions, obviously, but do we think that, you know, this thing, El Cuco, was created solely because of the deaths of the Bolton family in the cave?
Oh, no, I feel like he predated, like, I feel like this thing has been around for a while. Yeah,
I agree. Yeah.
And that it just so happened that way because they were in that cave.
Well, you know, I think it's also why El Cuco was finding himself close to grave sites. So mm-hmm. I'm imagining that he was filling himself with the blood of, or whatever, the energy family. Of the other dead relatives that he was, mm-hmm. you know, ingesting. Or, yeah. you know.
Correct.
Yeah, right.
So that makes sense.
I was like, what did I just say? Okay, yeah.
That's why I always say, like, I read too many theories, because, like, everyone has their
theory. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And, like,
yeah.
You know. There's
and believe it, we all had our own theories and we were in it reading the scripts. You know.
Wait, does this mean that?
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. I honestly think it was really Cynthia Erivo's character that brought Jack to.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. So, I mean, like, ultimately, in the sense of, like, he's the one. I just mean, like, he made the first step.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, he definitely was the aggressor to start making. But, oh, wow, a lot. I literally watched that sequence, mm-hmm. and my jaw was dropped, I think, the whole time. I was going to, like, make a note for myself. What an opening. But then I thought, why do I need to make that note?
Right.
That was 3 days.
Three days.
In that forest. I got bitten by red ants, obviously.
Oh, no.
Lying on the floor.
No.
But you want to be, even though we're corpses for a lot of the sequences,
right.
you want to be there. Everybody, you know, wants to support each other and so on and so forth. And it was good for Paddy as well, seeing his brother, you know, cold and dead.
Yeah.
But, it was 3 days. I thought it was brilliantly shot. Andrew Bernstein shot that shot the episode, as one mm-hmm. of the producers on the show. And you're right about going back to Holly, Cynthia's character.
Mm-hmm.
I think and I thought that Mark played that passage brilliantly behind mm-hmm. with the gun.
Yeah,
because he has her in his hairlines for quite a long time, mm-hmm. and he just switches that nuance where the last bit of good intentions in him comes out for
right.
me. You know, and he goes, I can't wipe her out.
Right.
Here's the other part though that I was thinking, and it's when they got to the cave. And El Cuco said to Cynthia's character, how did you know? And it was that whole, how we punctuated the episode at the end, an outsider knows an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of me that thinks when she was in front, of Jack,
mm-hmm.
I also think that El Cuco in that moment also stopped Jack. So I think that there was some weird, I don't know if I can't say it was a connection, but I just think that there was something deep that was happening between her character and El Cuco.
That's interesting.
That I think also could have been at play. And of course, that's a speculation.
No, I like that. And I would say I'd go on further and say perhaps it was the special nuances that she has as a woman that was making it not happen.
Happy International Women's Day.
There you go.
All the strong women out there.
I think it's. You can especially make that note when thinking about, you know, what she sees at the very end of the episode where she sees Jack behind her in the mirror. Now, you know, we essentially are led to believe that that's a figment of her imagination because she, you know, immediately picks up the mirror and or looks in the mirror again and he's not there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's in that moment, I definitely agree that there was some connection between El Cuco, but you see on his face that he is looking at her like, wait, you're the only person who is not challenging me. Like, oh, you're not afraid of me. So it's like she brought out the curiosity of, you know, no one's ever done that. If anyone, obviously, if someone's shooting at everybody else, you're just going to run. And that's what every other single character was doing.
And she's devoid in that moment when she looks up at the camera. She's devoid of everything apart from her core nuance of this brain that she's got and these nuances that she's got, you know. And I think that might have been at play a little bit.
Yeah.
And I also think she was so just empty knowing that Andy was gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big beat for her.
And I think in that moment, you're just like, you're so defeated that you're like, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And because such a terrible way, like he didn't just get shot. Got shot and then he wasn't dead, or I don't think he was dead yet and burned alive. So like a terrible thing to think. And then even like she explains at the end of the episode with her saying, you know, he was literally here just to be with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then he became involved. So, I mean, it's good to see the type of character that she played because, you know, she talks about in the very beginning of the season how she doesn't really have relationships with people. So I thought that was an interesting thing for them to add to her character.
Yes.
Her to act like show true emotions about someone.
Mm-hmm.
Why do y'all think that in that moment where she's walking toward Jack and staring at him, devoid of everything, when she says, like, damn you to hell, and screams it, why was that the thing that clicked that human emotion back in him? Because that's when he was like, oh, crap. I forget what he said exactly.
Well, again, I think it's that weird cuckoo listening in, right? And so I think, you know, because she's a genius, because she is so fact, you know, she's filled with data, facts, knowing just so much about so much, I think that there's something. Either she read, she knows about, you know, demons or you know, spooks and things of that nature, where saying these words may have an effect. So I think it was one of those. And obviously, I think El Cuco heard it too.
Yeah.
So I think it was just like this big pause. I don't know.
Yeah, and ultimately as well, she's also in the history of her life. It seems that she's facing her ultimate nemesis at this point, and so her strength is her strength is there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So maybe that.
That's a great point.
I don't know.
I like that Ben was like, get out of there.
Right. But she doesn't, doesn't even hear it. Like,
no,
I mean,
she
hears it, but
tunnel vision. Yeah.
She
definitely
doesn't care whatsoever.
Yeah.
And then he lets the snake bite him. Now, this is where I was a little confused because of him. He ends up killing himself or shoots himself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, why'd you let the snake bite you if you were just going to shoot yourself later? I guess I'm about to answer my own question. I think by having the snake bite him, that was like, you know, the poison automatically starts coursing through your veins and things like that, and so it's a sign to El Cuco, like, I'm done. I'm not doing anything else whatsoever because, look, I just did this.
So people in chat last week were saying that the snake was Cuco, or like an embodiment of Cuco.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Oh, because he did say, or like, you see, you know, he shoos the snake away, and then whenever Jack starts to kind of stop or realize what he's doing, that's when the snake just kind of slivers right back up and stares at him.
Yeah, and so I think that could have been plausible on some weird level. Because again, we don't really know the powers of El Cuco. We don't really know what he was capable of.
Mm-hmm.
We know... The whole show has been us getting these little tiny nuggets the whole time.
Yeah.
We're like, is that it? Is that it? So I kind of liked what chat was saying.
What was it called? A MacGyver, when you put in something moody. Hitchcock used to do it in a lot of his films. Maybe the snake's nothing, but I think.
Sure, right.
But,
yeah.
I do think it's written for him to have that with the snake. So there's something there. I don't know what it is. Jack knows he's on his way out. Maybe he was trying to send a message to Cuco with that and the toxicity of that. You know what I mean?
Well, that's where he says the line. I mean, we can't say it on our show, but the come at me, mother trucker. to the snake. Very good, April.
Mother trucker, that's very rude.
That is exactly what you said, right?
Mother trucker.
So
actually, that also could be it. That although it's so random that a snake would just be there at that moment. I don't know. And stay there.
They're in the woods. Snakes are everywhere. So
yeah, I don't go to the woods. Who knows? In April, but I'll believe you.
There you go.
Although I've heard there's a lot of red ants.
Oh God.
Oh my God. Right. Everywhere. Awful. Right. When they finally are entering the cave and see El Cuco, this is what was so interesting to me, because a big topic of the conversation also is, do we even know if this, let's say, creature
can be killed?
Mm-hmm. Because my first inclination is to say no, or not in the traditional way of heart, brain, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't realize it at the time, but him saying that, or, where they see the prints on the little, whatever you call that, stairwell thing. And she's like, oh, he's afraid of falling, which shows weakness, which means he can be killed. Just the fact that Holly can come to that sort of realization just by seeing, the handprints right there.
Yeah.
I would have never thought that. I would have just been like, oh, he's trying to be, sassy with them, basically.
Well, we know... I guess I feel like they did give us glimmers, because obviously he needs to feed to be alive or what have you. So if he's not fed, he's dead, or he's not himself.
Right.
So I guess I thought that there definitely was a way to get rid of him. I don't think I thought that it was going to be done the way that they did it, though.
Mm. No, I definitely didn't either. And then I thought for sure when he's having the moment with Holly and she says, why children? And Ralph is screaming, stop talking to him, stop asking him questions. Why children? And he says, because they taste the sweetest.
Mm.
I thought that, I was like, oh, Ralph is about to take him out, for sure. Mm-hmm. But that's when we see your brother Claude enter. And he was clearly very shook about seeing himself, but not himself in this man. So I myself thought that Ralph and Holly were kind of going to be able to talk him down from doing something about it because of how...
You didn't think he was.
I thought he wanted to, clearly. Yeah. But I thought they were going to be able to talk him down from that. Because clearly Holly wanted to go farther with this as far as, really finding out scientifically.
Yeah.
Were y'all surprised when Claude ends up shooting him? Or no, you expected it?
Well, I expected it. And then what I thought was clever was... she puts the knife through his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And then, from a film point perspective, when they're walking out and then Ben's character sees his child, he knows it's still alive. And I loved what they did where he's kind of... when he starts moving and he comes back alive and then his face morphs into all of his victims, I thought it was really clever. He's golding him, it's like... and so eventually I believed it. At first I was like, oh God, I hope, because I didn't see the episode. And so I didn't know how they were going to shoot it, but I was like, I hope they really pulverize him in some way. And they did.
And yet they left
us with so many open doors
for
the future. Who knows what's going to happen,
Right.
But I thought that was brilliant. And I really particularly thought that Paddy's portrayal in there is very difficult, very, very difficult thing to do that without being mincy or over the top, or I like the taste of kids because they taste sweet,
Right.
He was more eerie for me because he played it straighter, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I thought he did a terrific job.
I think so too.
In that scene, he didn't have to go through makeup though, right? So
he is actually in quite for when he's El Cuco.
Well,
they morph his face, you mean?
I noticed.
Oh no, that's CGI. Digital.
It was obviously very apparent in episode 8 when it was half Cuco, half him.
Yes.
But in the cave, it looked like they just kind of messed with his hair.
A little bit of facial stuff.
The eye thing as well.
That's right.
They did subtle stuff. Maybe I just missed it. I was maybe my house was too dark.
No, it was dark, but you could still, when he stepped into the light, you could kind of see.
That there was stuff there?
Okay. And I love the I keep going arty.
I
like the Acopolypse Now references. There was a couple of silhouette shots with the warmth from the caves just shooting him in.
Right.
I thought his body movement was great.
I
thought it was quite eerie when he gets up and, it was quite wacky.
Do you think when Ralph is explaining to him, when he's saying, I could, get a truckload of people to come in here and they're going to poke and prod you and all of this stuff, Do you? He's having these moments where, you know, he's growling and groaning and whatever. Mm-hmm. So in that moment, do you think he would prefer being destroyed over that? I was like, maybe that's a way that he is going to potentially stay alive, that he's not fully destroyed. But no, like they, like you said, they pulverized him. Smashed his face in. But do you think that he wanted to maybe be destroyed over this happening, over being like a science project, or preferred
to stay alive? I think his only MO when they came in there was to eat them all.
Yeah.
I think that was
eat
it.
Eat them all!
Yeah.
Is that a Metallica song? It should be.
It should be.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's not, absolutely. No, I agree. But I do like that they gave Ralph that moment with him.
Yeah, for sure.
Because he's been obviously the most testy with believing that all of this stuff is true. Mm-hmm. But then he still kind of held his roots in the end and was like, you know what? Ultimately, the best thing is for you to be destroyed and for no one to ever know that you existed.
Mm-hmm. I will say, when I was watching, mm-hmm. there was a part of me when I saw Claude on the ground, mm-hmm. you know, after everything had been all shaken up in there. I was like, wait, is that all Kuko? Is this a ploy? Is this a... So it was a part of me where I was like freaking out for a second because I didn't know what was going on.
Exactly the same thing.
You did?
Yeah. Yeah.
It was another moment for Allison where I was like, are they screwing with me right now? Is that really Claude or is that not Claude? Is Claude gone?
Right.
So I had a little bit of a mini panic attack in that like first few seconds. But then I was trying to figure out, okay, can I see the shoes? Because El Cuco had like boots on. I was like, give me some more information.
But then like his eyes were so, you probably couldn't see it at first, but then you see like this part of his eyes and they're so messed up.
Like sunken in. Okay.
It's like he definitely looks dead. You would not know that he wasn't unless we see Ralph see his son and all of that stuff.
But I thought the same thing when you see Paddy walking. I don't mm-hmm. know whether it was the way they lit it and whether it was a conscious choice, but I was like, oh, is he in now?
What,
right. Yeah, I did for a second, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Max.
Well,
thank you.
And then now y'all are making me think, like, what if he could have potentially, like, switched into Holly at the end? Why are they having these moments? Mm. I don't think so, but now I'm like... You just never know.
Yeah, it's true. That's definitely truth. Yes.
Obviously, the episode ends with they formed this story about, you know, what happened, and essentially they're putting all the blame on Jack, basically, because that's all they really can do as far as like explaining mm-hmm. why these people were there and the other differences in, you know, the Terry Maitland case and stuff like that. But clearly, Holly is very, very bothered that this is the route that Ralph chose to take. You don't think so?
Well, I mean, if she's bothered, I think she's going to get over it because she knows that the world is not going to accept demons and, you know, strange creatures of the supernatural. Like, that just wouldn't be a sell. And, you know, the fact that we're trying to create some release for the Maitland family, mm-hmm. that wouldn't have worked if we all said, oh, yeah, this thing killed... Frankie Peterson.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think she may have been initially like, oh, the world isn't ready for this.
Yeah.
Like that sort of disappointment where the world isn't ready. But look, at least she got Ralph on her side.
Yeah.
So that's progress.
And like they
she did by the end.
They had this sweet moment of like, oh, maybe let's work together in the future.
I love that. I was like, season two. Oh, this is our little gem.
We got a lot of things that season two could potentially happen.
I agree.
For sure.
There's so much. But I'm also happy that they gave Glory, Terry's wife, the moment of, oh, hey, your husband is going to be exonerated. Because there was a little part of me that I was like, is this all for nothing? Because like you said, the world's not going to believe ever that El Cuco killed
a small
all these
portion.
People.
It'd be a little niche group.
I'd like to know what your thoughts on the Who's Terry line. When Cynthia says, and Holly says, who's Terry?
You know, I actually wrote that down in my notes because I was confused. I had to literally go back and think, like, did they not tell her why she was doing this? But they definitely did.
Oh, no, she knows. But I'm just trying to think, who's speaking there? Is it Holly? Is it, you know, what is it?
Oh, my gosh.
Who knows? It's Richard Price and Stephen King, so you never know.
We need to have him on our after show.
I'm like,
every
chat, did you hear that? That's I'm like, crazy. Everyone in chat, did you hear that?
That's a great point. I thought the same thing I was like, that's a really weird thing for her to say, but mm-hmm. no one, or clearly they never addressed it mm-hmm. again. Mm-hmm. But
again, season two. I don't know.
You there keep you saying it. I mean, half of us have been killed, so we won't be on it.
I know. It's so. Trust me, I was thinking that. I was like, well, we're not seeing him. Yeah, we're not seeing him. We're not seeing him.
But so has Jack was killed, and guess what? We saw him again.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, everybody kind of gets their little, their sweet little moments at the end with Ralph and his wife saying, you know, maybe they'll see their son again one day. Mm-hmm. I think that, like we've said many times, that that's how they ended the episode specifically. There was a part of me that I was like, oh, all of this action just happened within the first 15 minutes and we still have 45 minutes left of the episode.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with this?
I was nervous. I was like, wait, is it over?
Same. Yeah. I was like, this is a shorter episode.
Yeah.
But I think that that's exactly... That's got to be the reason.
Well, you have to owe it. You have to owe it to El Cuco and to the fans and the viewers. You've got to really have a very, very serious, meaty scene with him, which you do have in the caves, you know,
right?
And from all three perspectives. And I think that because when I was watching the show, Paddy was a very revered actor.
Right.
He's in this bit and he's in that bit, and I'm like, and then when I got there, we were doing more together. But mm-hmm. I'm like, God, they've got to tap into his talents. Yeah. And then he's like, Max, I've just read 10. There's a lot, and it's going to be great to do. So, you know, and that's what I think they had to do. Get that explosive start and then get into the meat of what he is, you know?
We underestimated Claude for a while, his character, I mean, because, you know, obviously you see him a lot, but you don't fully know why or what he's doing there. Mm-hmm. So, definitely, it's hard to say because there were so many. The whole season was amazing, but I'm not just saying this because you're here. Literally, since you've been on the show, those are my favorite episodes because of. Obviously, we know a little more. We have more answers at this mm-hmm. point, even though we don't have all of the answers. So I think that it was just done in such a great way in this character that all season on our after show, we're like, we think Claude is something. We just don't know what. Like, there's a very specific thing. You know, at one point, we learned that he was scratched by Terry Maitland. Yeah. But
and also, there's some poignant beats with him early on, isn't there, with Terry Maitland, where they have a, you know, they have a good with Ben, where he has him in the police.
Oh yes.
Quite poignant scene. So there are little drops here where you go, what's his deal in this? You know,
right?
Someone in chat just said, JS, is everyone in Hollywood secretly British? Sorry, I chuckled.
Allison and I are not secretly British.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely, this is just me. But, what can I say?
A lot, unfortunately.
No. That's amazing.
No.
Okay, what else from the episode did we miss? We want to talk about you and your career and all that
stuff. Oh, wait, so here's the interesting thing. Yes, I do want to talk about that. But I also thought it was interesting at the end how they broke up the end. So credits rolled, and then they did this sequence with Holly, and I thought... because that they had not done the entire season. Yeah. There was no...
I've never seen that on a TV show in my life.
I don't think I have either. Only on I've seen it in a movie.
Movies like Star Wars or things like that.
Not that. Like, yeah, no. Because it was like 30 seconds of titles. Yeah. Right. And then back we come.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was like, oh, this is... like I've transitioned to, you know, about the episode, how they do that whenever you watch like through the HBO app or whatever. Mm. I kind of thought that. But now that you bring that up... it makes me think again about the El Cuco thing with her, because why would she automatically have taken the mirror and looked at her neck to see if something was wrong if she didn't think that something was a possibility?
Did she grab his hand in the cave?
No, she stabbed his heart. No, I think that the imagery of Jack, the sense memory of seeing Jack there immediately made her do that because she is a believer. I think that's that. What's more interesting to me was the cut on her arm when she's playing with her hair.
Yeah.
There's the cut on the arm. And, you know,
because she had that the little mirror, like the little circular mirror, waiting.
Yeah.
Like,
to check.
You don't just have, I could see it if she just felt it, but she had a mirror waiting to look. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's
everyone in chat says that she's changing. Like, they're all saying it. And also, they said that Sharp Objects did the credit roll and then something else.
I didn't
Jerry O'Brien for the win.
Hey, Jerry.
But they are all saying that they think Holly's changing.
Wow.
Because
we'll know. Eventually.
That is true. Someone brought up something interesting. Kim Sanchez just said, never in the season did I see her playing with her hair. And it's true, like that sequence at the end, it was a lot of hair twirling, playing.
And somebody said, I read somewhere that somebody said that was shot in reverse. She was playing with her hair in reverse. And I was like, I didn't look at it again. I wanted to look at it again, but that'd be interesting, you
know. That'd be really cool. I'll have to look at that again.
Okay, too. That was creepy. Anyway,
creepy.
So that's
creepy.
I was like, we can't not talk about that because that's.
something.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, Max.
Yes.
We want to know just a little bit about your time on the show.
Yeah.
You know, some fun stories from filming, things like that. I know it's always tough because that's what everyone wants to know, but, you know, like, loyal fans here.
You know, like, the things that come, like, the first things that come to mind, like, funny things or, like, jokesters on set. Were you the jokester on, you know, just, like, you know, those things.
Oh, no, God, no. I used to be the jokester years ago.
Okay.
But it all changed. I get far too serious about the work. I'm boring.
Accent. I think that's much better, though, probably.
Very serious about the work.
Well, because I heard that on The Affair, it was Dominic Cooper.
Yeah.
Dominic
West?
Dominic West. That's a different Brit. Dominic West was like the big, they're like friends, so I can mention that name.
Yeah.
He was the big guy, like, doing a lot of pranks on set.
Well, it's funny. We're all very different characters. You know, Bill Camp's a seasoned theatre and television and film actor. Jerry Bobbs does his own thing. Yule's the same. Those two guys are very seasoned. Paddy's done a lot of things. You know, we all come from hugely different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And we also have very different approaches to the work. And Ben as well. And Ben has the ability to he could be talking about racehorsing or whatever, and then bang, he's in the scene with you. You know,
right.
I like to go off and if you know they're doing setups and whatever, I'll just go somewhere quiet to prep, and then go and do the work. But it never used to be like that. I used to mess about a bit on set when I was younger. You know, but
yeah.
It's everybody has their own sort of method of working. You know, and. But it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things, they called it Cat Piss House, our house, because it absolutely reeked.
Really?
It was horrific. The house was horrific.
Was that to, like, get you guys into the mood?
No, it was just by default. It just happened. But I loved that, you see. So at lunchtime, I used to sit in Cat Piss House eating my lunch.
Oh, my gosh.
And I liked all of that. But the guys were like, oh, my
this
God.
This is terrible.
Get
us
out
of here.
Yeah. But it was brilliant, and that helped me feel, certainly for Paddy and I also, because we're so opposite to what we were playing.
Right.
You know, we're Brits. I'm from Manchester. Paddy's from just a little bit south of Manchester. And we need everything we can get to feel a sense of the world that we're in, you know.
Right.
I liked dancing with all those actors. I liked, you know, Ben has his own method. And like I say, when he's on and the camera's rolling, bang, he's on, you know.
Yeah. Where did y'all film at?
We were in Atlanta. Okay. And then the drive was like 45 minutes out of Atlanta. I don't know the town's name.
Gotcha.
But some of that stuff was great. And I think the tone, I don't know where some of the wider opening shots were shot, but I think the tone that Jason Bateman set for it was just, I loved it, man. Those first two episodes are just, you know, constructed so beautifully. Mm-hmm. And they look so great.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a reason why there's long shots, and there's why you feel you, it's not just that we're getting this and then we're getting this. It was a clever way, I think, of pulling the audience viewer in.
Mm-hmm.
To want to get into the world, you know. And I thought he set a brilliant tone for the piece. I loved it.
Yeah, I agree. We started off the season kind of comparing the look to Ozarks, because obviously mm-hmm. his other show.
Mm-hmm.
And I still, it's just so similar. But I love how they did it for this show, because it really does kind of create a presence for it. Everything's like slightly more contrasted, like more black and white-esque. There's always a little bit of like a film over.
Yeah, the filters are similar. Technically, the filters that he uses on Ozark and what they were using there, they're similar. This was more of a darker grain vibe to it. You know, there wasn't so many splashes of colour and everything, but very similar. But I just think it's clever, and I think he said in an interview that he's you know, he gives a few nods to Kubrick in some of his setups, and I think it worked beautifully. And then it's funny, isn't it? Because directors years ago, when they were coming onto a show, would say, this is my style, this is what I want to do. But mm-hmm. it's the first guy sets the tone, and really you've got to interpret that as best as you can and as close as you can to that, you know.
Right.
But we had a great time. We all got on extremely well. Paddy and I had never, we knew of each other, but we'd never worked together. Mm-hmm. And
now they're going to have a podcast. No, I'm just kidding.
No, we're actually having a child.
even better.
Patty's giving birth.
It's so nice when you can like bond with actor. Oh, like that. Perfect.
No, it is. It is because we're also. I was a musician. Patty's a frontman of his own band. He's a great lyricist. He's a great songwriter. Mm-hmm. And then Yule's a musician. So we talk about that. Bill's just a master. He's just a wonderful guy to watch work, you know.
Yeah.
Jeremy, another solid guy, man. Just interesting that we all... And Julianne, I worked with Julianne. I did a movie with her probably 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I hadn't seen her since. But it's crazy because Atlanta is the hub of filmmaking now. So
it really is.
I mean, we would just walk into a restaurant on a weekend, maybe three or four of us, and then... Clint Eastwood was doing his movie there. They were doing Richard Jewell, so Sammy Rockwell will be there, and Olivia, you know, John Hatt, and then another group,
right?
And you're like, this is insane.
That's wild.
It's like a crazy nut house for crazy actors going out to the restaurant. But so we had some fun,
yeah,
and then we had very intense bursts of concentration,
yes,
and red ant bites in the cold forest and the boiling
that
weather in
just
Atlanta.
Amazing.
Yeah,
but so. At least you got to like have some fun. I lived in Atlanta for like 8 months, so mm-hmm. I probably know all the spots y'all went to. Also,
yeah.
But it—I mean, it's kind of amazing, like what's happened in that city since I lived there like 7 years ago now.
Uh-huh.
And it's just like completely blowing up. It's
well, Pinewood's used for a lot of the stuff there. They do a lot of the shows there, and around the city while we were there, literally there must have been 15 productions going on, you know. But
wow.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked it, and like I say, you know, what the locations that they found for that show were just brilliant. And
yeah.
The minute you put the gear on, the minute you walk on set, you're feeling that you're there.
You're in it, and
you're in it, you know.
Yeah. Wait, I have to ask, slightly off topic, but you said you're from Manchester. Does that mean you're a soccer fan?
Massive.
Football fan, sorry. Massive.
Yeah,
he knew what you meant.
Yeah,
I knew what you meant. My daughters are American, so like, Dad, I watch the soccer.
I was going to text him, I'm wearing white trainers, because, you know, we hadn't met
trainers,
for the show.
Trainers, old school.
I was going to say that, and then I was like, no, he knows what a sneaker is. It's fine.
I get told off now. My brothers in England are like, sneakers? What are you saying?
What's the matter with you? Yeah, yeah.
You know?
See, mine's even worse. I just call them all tennis shoes.
Tennis shoes.
Yeah, tennis or whatever.
Slightly old school.
Yeah, that's what we call them.
Okay, so a few things maybe for us to just mention real fast. Mm. Slight deviation. What if Holly's been changed this whole time? Like, she's sort of this, you know, alternate,
cold,
interesting... Well, we think of her as a person, but like, could she be something else? Possibly. I don't know.
I feel like maybe not, just because she gave so much information. Like, she was the one giving
information.
I think what you see is what you get with her.
Yeah, I think
so too. And then the end song that she was listening to, that was the one that she had a whole conversation with Ralph about, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, that's the song from his mother's.
I think so.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Clever. I think that's what that was.
Clever.
Right. Because when I was hearing it, I was like, why are they doing that?
Yeah.
Okay, wait.
Very
didn't I have questions? I text you like so many questions,
yeah.
And now I'm like, what the hell?
That's
are
okay.
They?
That's what happens. Time flies when you're having fun.
Anything else you want fans to know? Stuff you're
any
working
projects?
On? Obviously, he can't tell us about stuff that's in development right now. But anything that you know you want to talk about? Any music stuff? Was there an outsider band? There could have been. Cynthia Revo is a great singer.
There could have been Cynthia.
Maybe you should make that happen. Like a one night affair, a fundraiser. Bring all you guys together and just do a massive show.
No, she
April and I will be there.
We will be there.
She was talking about music, and I'd before going to film, I'd done my own album, and because I was a classical pianist, and then I started playing jazz when I was like 10. And I worked with many, many, many musicians and mm-hmm. artists over the years before I got into acting.
Mm-hmm.
In 1994, I watched Raging Bull, and that was a switch for me. I became an actor.
Yeah.
I had a phenomenal coach in New York called Sheila Gray, who's just the best. And she said, are you serious about it? I said, yeah. And I was working with George Benson at the time and George Michael. So it was my career was going well as a musician. But
right.
I just said, I just love this medium, and I know I've got a lot to learn, unfortunately, I used to be a perfectionist, I'm not anymore, because you never reach that, do you? You know, it's,
right.
You just give yourself torment. But, so we would talk about the music, and then Cynthia said, I'm a singer, you know, and I was mm-hmm. like, And then I listened in front. I didn't care. I was like, let's have a listen, baby. And yeah. I said, oh, you got a good voice. And she's like, thanks. And
I was just nominated for Alt.
I know. Yeah. And I said, no, I've just been in Capitol. I've just done a studio album with an orchestra at Capitol, and I've got all friends that I used to work with as a session musician, British singers, American singers. Mm-hmm. And she was like, we should do something at some point. And I was like, okay. But I haven't heard from her since, obviously. but
since she's like, Oscar, she's about to text
the
you
Oscar
right
nomination.
Now.
but yeah, and Yule's a phenomenal guitarist. Mm. And Paddy, genuinely. So I worked with a British guy called Paul Weller, who mm-hmm. that was my first gig when I was 18. And he had the band The Jam, then The Style Council, then his own. He's a phenomenal songwriter.
Cool.
And he's like one of the best lyricists. And then Paddy said, I've got this band, you know, I'm into the music and I know you are. And I said, oh, let's have a listen, mate. And I'm listening to it and it sounds great. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, the lyrics, I want to, can you send us the lyrics to these? And mm-hmm. you can on iTunes, you can hit the lyrics.
Yeah.
Some of the best lyrics I've ever read in my life.
Oh, wow.
He is a phenomenal songwriter.
That's amazing.
So, and he's very humble, you know, he doesn't talk about it often. But yeah, between us all, I think, did Jeremy play something as well? And Bill, maybe? I mean, we're all
I need to learn an instrument.
I would join you for the tambourine.
Tambourine's difficult.
Well, I can do it.
Pandeiro, Brazilian, very difficult.
Oh, I don't know if I can do that. No, I can do like a hip thing, you know, like.
I think one should always be able, I'd say piano for everyone.
I can do a little piano.
Oh.
I think it's important. My father said to me when I was like 11, he said, stick with it, because I was like, I'm bored, I want to go out and play with the kids. And he was mm-hmm. like, you'll always be able to earn money if you can play the piano. Mm.
That's a great point.
Always.
For sure.
And yeah.
Wisdom.
There you go.
I love it. Mm. Any upcoming projects you can tell us about?
Well, I've had a film in development for many, many, many years.
Okay.
Called Mr. Goodnight.
Nice.
Which is...
Good name.
It's a crime drama. It's about the mafia in Manchester in the 1960s.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we're getting quite close, thankfully, we think, this year to getting it funded. But I've got a phenomenal cast in that. And awesome. It's something that I wrote. It was my first and one of only two things that I'll ever write, because I find writing quite difficult.
It's very hard.
But yeah.
That's so exciting.
I'm going to do that. And hopefully... we'll shoot that before the end of the year, which awesome. Would be great. And then there's a couple of things here which are very interesting.
But he can't talk about.
But you know what?
Oh.
You know what's funny? When actors are asked that, of course you can talk about it.
Well.
But there are a few things that actually you really can't.
No, you can't.
Yeah. These NDA forms.
Oh,
no, right.
Like,
they're
what? Ridiculous.
Oh, we know. Yeah, yeah, we know. So, you sign your life away. It's like,
Yeah, so, and also there's a great project, but it's not quite nailed down yet, and I don't want to jinx it.
So things are pending.
I get that.
Things are in motion. You can follow him on social.
Life. That's an actor's life.
Yeah,
that
always. Yes.
Pending. There's pending things.
Salad days and then good days. You know, it's good years, bad years. It's the life we choose, unfortunately.
For sure. But a lot to look out for.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty coming out. There'll be plenty coming out, which is great.
I was joking with April saying, do you think Meghan Markle watched The Outsider?
Oh, God, I don't know. But what I do remember from that show is she was absolutely lovely, a really nice lady, tenacious, smart, talented. But all my stuff was with Sarah Rafferty, who's just... Mm-hmm. She's a lovely girl.
It was interesting because you were on in 2013, right? And
God,
still,
was it that long ago?
Well, the fandom
it seems like just like yesterday.
The fandom is all still, because I was looking up stuff this morning and people were like, guess who from Suits is on The Outsider? And I was like, because it wasn't, you know, it was just so interesting that there is such fandom still around that show.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Fun facts.
Well, it was a good show. And Gabriel Macht. I walked in on that and they said, oh, you're going to be sort of like the British, you're going to be the sort of the version of the lead character. And I went, okay. So I'm like, who's this guy? Bang. I'm like, oh, he looks like George Clooney. This is I'm not going to get away with that. And then and they said, no, we're going to put you in nice suits and a nice car. I went, well, I'm not the elephant, man. but he was great. And that was a terrific show. I enjoyed that thoroughly.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us for this. I know everyone in chat enjoyed it. We enjoyed it so much.
Great to be here.
Can't wait to do
an
after show for your movie. I know, right?
We had
Max in studio. This is always the best finales when we actually can have someone.
Lovely singing voice, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Hey, like voice. I said, if you need me,
okay,
call me up.
She'll sing. I'll play the piano.
Okay,
I can be a good backup. That's all I know.
Awesome. Love it.
Thank you.
Highlight. So and also, can we shout out to our producer in studio who's been with us for the last 9 weeks, Jonathan?
Thank you, Jonathan. You're the best.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you so much,
Rockstar producer. All right.
Well, thank you all so much for joining us. Hopefully we do get a season 2 so y'all can tune in for that as well. Until then, I'm April Wissenhant. You can find me everywhere at April Wissenhant. How about y'all?
I'm Allison Dean, and I've been Allison Dean this last 10 weeks with all of you and enjoyed it so thoroughly. You can find me at The Allison Dean. And Max?
I'm Max Beasley, and I've been Max Beasley for 48 years.
Yes, lovely.
And where can they find you?
On social media?
Twitter, Instagram.
Oh, Max Beasley, and then the number 7, Twitter and Instagram. Don't do Facebook.
No, it's fine.
Great. Awesome.
Thank you all.
Thank you all so much. See you soon.
Hopefully. Crossing fingers.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.